You and your connections.
It was interesting. I'm working on them.
You're working.
I'm working on them. What did she say?
I know it's not good because it's corriente. Everybody's here? All right, we're gonna go ahead and get started.
It is 5:36. Are we calling this meeting to order? For Tuesday, April 15, it is 5:36. I'm calling this meeting to order. Can I get a roll call?
Jaime Tadeo.
Here.
Ana Bonilla.
Present.
Kate Calhoun.
Here.
Carlos Portillo.
Actually, here.
Nancy Hub.
I'm here.
Jerry Flannery.
Here.
My chair, we have the form.
Yay!
Thank you. Next item in the agenda is to approve the legal action report and minutes of March 19, 2025.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the legal action report and minutes. Please.
I'll second.
Jaime Tadeo.
Here.
Ana Bonilla.
Aye.
Kate Calhoun.
Yes.
Carlos Portillo.
Wait, what was this? Yes, I didn't know I voted on this.
No.
It's been a month, okay?
My apologies, yeah.
Nancy Hub?
Yes.
Carol does.
Thank you. The next item in the agenda is report from chairperson. I don't have anything to report back, but I was just speaking with Kate about transferring over the hours, the training hours for you all, so we can keep track of those also.
Okay. Does that mean, honey, that you're keeping track of them for us, or we need to report them to you?
That's a great question.
Okay. We're glad you like it.
Report to me.
Okay.
Yeah, you're over reporting to me.
And so the training that we did a week or so ago,
I'll put those on the document that I send over to
your little spreadsheet. Kate will do it, and then from now on, we'll let Honey know what we do. Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Chair, this might be the appropriate time to do a quick review from the members that were present at the WET workshop.
Oh, okay.
I was present at that workshop. I blew a 0-0 after two glasses of wine, and then I blew a 0.06 after two vodkas, and I could do a tree pose.
A tree pose!
A tree pose?
Tree pose.
Can you explain that? Okay.
It's yoga.
Yoga?
Yeah. It was fun.
How was the exercises? The walking and the...
It wasn't walking. They did a lot of the... I can't remember the name.
HGN?
HGN. So it was HGN training. Yes. So it was a lot of eye movement, and it was very fascinating. And I have a laundry list of people who would like to follow in my footsteps. So I know you all do something at Soletzi, so please let me know. I've got friends of all ages and all drinking capacities.
And I requested, it must have been 6 to 8 officers that did the HGN?
Correct.
Okay, HGN. And there were some, and I even, because I've been drinking, told a couple of them that I liked when they would kind of stop at the center and then move, because I could kind of realign or recalibrate like that. And I don't know if that's good feedback or not, but I thought, I'm here to learn, and they're here to learn, so Tony knows me well. I thought, yes. I will just tell them that when they did the stop, that was helpful to me, the drunk person. And then I did ask, because I go to my silver sneakers classes and work on balance, I asked if I could do the walking test. So I might have been the only one of all of us to do the walking test because I asked for it. But I blew 0 when we got there, of course. And then after 4 maker's marks, I did a 1. And then after some pizza and water, I did 0.06. So that was my evening.
That
And it was very interesting. I'd never
breathalyzed before.
Pardon?
Tell me the time period.
Did you have four Baker's marks?
22 hours.
No, how fast? How long? Time period?
What was the time in between?
Over probably...
It was 25 minutes and then a 15-minute break and then another 45 minutes.
Yeah, so over like 2 hours, I had four little...
So,
Jerry,
I'm glad I wasn't there. One and two. I work at Whiskey the Bucket. I want to give you a personal invitation to go on a free tour. And maybe you could buy something because you sound like someone up our alley. I could do four.
I could do
five tequilas in the same time period, but I couldn't do Four Makers Mark.
What about you?
Brown Liquor just killed me.
Yes, I'd love that tour. Thank you, Carlos.
One number hit your blow.
I don't know. They didn't tell me.
I don't know what.
I knew I wasn't interested. I just drank whiskey.
You just drank.
Yeah, I had like 9. They were supposed to give me 12, but I wore my guy out and he stopped bringing them.
So, I'm doing pretty good.
At the beginning of the evening, they asked who wanted to be on the drunker side, and Jerry said, "I'll do that. Wow. I'll for the team." Because so Kate and I were like, "Oh my God, 4 is plenty. 12 is way too much." And Jerry said, "I'll take that." And then we played cards for a little while until he just kind of lost concentration or didn't care anymore. It was pretty funny.
I was hanging out with some other people.
Jerry had a great time.
Yeah. It was just like,
were any of you surprised by your blood alcohol levels?
Yes.
I was surprised that, like, on my own, I don't usually get that far gone. And I was supposed to have, like, 12 to reach my body weight index or whatever. And so I feel a lot better now. Actually, I thought I had a little more of something to be concerned about.
No number?
And you didn't do the walk and the turn test? Or the
one no, just did the eyes.
Yeah, lots of eyes.
Yeah, the HDM, but no one did the other tests?
Mm-hmm. I did the walk because I asked for it, but I didn't see anybody else. There were 3 of us, and then 3 of them, and 3 of them, and 3 of them. It seemed like there were a dozen people all in the one gal. Anyway, so there were a dozen of us. And I didn't see anybody else do the walk, but I asked, I wanted to do it, to prove that I could. Anyway, it was very interesting, and hopefully it was helpful to them. That's, I guess, the reason for us to do it was to help them in their training. So hopefully we were... Again, the 333, you know, I don't know about the other, but us, hopefully we help them in their training. And it was, enlightening to me.
So and they know where you live, right?
Yeah, but I kind of...
Oh, a lot of people know where I live. That's all right. Doesn't bother me.
You're right home.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Moving on to the next agenda item.
Sorry I missed it.
Yeah. Me too. No, just had a spectator.
Yeah.
Zebra crew presentation.
Yeah. Where do I stand? Anywhere here?
Or you could sit there if you want to, Adrian.
I'll stand here. So I'm Officer Adrian Harrison. I'm with the ODM Zebra Unit. I think our official name is Community Engagement Team. There's 4 of us total, 2 during the day, 2 at night.
We're also on camera.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, a lot of what we do is typically proactive police work, addressing community complaints, quality of life issues, stuff like parks checks, going to businesses that have issues with trespassers or frequent thefts. We'll occasionally look for people that are wanted. Not typically anything super violent, because there's usually just me and my partner when we're working. So that's kind of the gist of what we do. Any questions?
Well, if I can just add, Adrian and Max came, I run that 5th Hour and I with Tony for over a year until he got moved, and now Brian Cochran, I'm Lieutenant Brian Cochran. And Adrian and Max came because some of the neighbors wanted to know what they do each night. And a lot of the park patrol, because that's a lot of what we talk about at our 5th Alvernon meetings, which is very similar to the Alvernon grant that they have once a month, and now they have one for, like, I think 29th area. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they came, and Max spoke about sort of what they did during the evenings, because you two are the evening guys.
Yeah.
And that you patrol the parks, because in our case, most of our little neighborhood parks have posted hours that they're open during the day, but at night, you're not supposed to be sleeping there, hanging out there.
Correct.
And so it's really beneficial to us to know that you zebra officers are out patrolling the park and telling those people to scoot away and they can't sleep there. So that was really helpful for the neighbors to know that that was part of what you did.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's way more that you do, but that particular seems to be kind of our complaint.
Yeah,
so we really appreciate that you do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a huge thing what we do. You know, we'll try to go out to at least one park every shift. We can't always hit all of them, but you know, the common ones are right there on Miramonte and of course Reed Park. We've seen mixed results. Miramonte Park seems to have a lot less activity since we started doing that at nighttime at least. And you know, we've gotten a lot of good arrests that way too, people that are committing various crimes or have warrants, et cetera. So yeah, it's been pretty effective, I think, on our end.
Do you patrol the 3660 East 3rd Street, that Royal Elkhorn? Does that always seem to be like a magnet place for people to come together and do bad things?
Yeah, we're there pretty frequently. Like I said, at least once a shift I'm cruising by there. You know, a lot of issues with drug use, trespassers, et cetera, there too. Just last week, we actually got a woman who had a felony warrant there who was using drugs in her vehicle. We even were able to try and get her some resources at the jail. We had Kodak go and visit her. So, you know, when people are open to trying to get sober, we try and give them that option or at least present those resources to them.
So when you do that, for instance, I'm sorry, I'm trying to finish up here. So when you do that and you do reach out and maybe it's like 2 o'clock in the morning where you run across somebody, and of course you can't at that hour probably find a resource for them. So what do you jail them if they're in possession of fentanyl or something? Or what happens like at 2 o'clock in the morning if you were to run across somebody who does want services? What happens?
There are a few facilities, I think. I want to say Kodak, and I think the one on Wilmont, I'm pretty sure, 24/7. It's pretty rare that people are willing to go then and there. You know, my partner, Officer McCauley, couldn't join us today, but, I mean, he is constantly trying to get people to go to these facilities. So it's not often that they want to go right then and there. As far as drug use, you know, I mean, everybody lives here. I'm sure someone's seen someone at Speedway Albert on smoking fentanyl or something. But we don't typically just arrest for drug possession. It's very rare for us to. It's usually along the lines of we're arresting them for something else and they also have drugs on them. So it is very rare for us to just only arrest for that drug possession.
Well, thanks for all you do.
Yeah, thank you. It's making
a difference. So thank
you. We're trying. Yeah, we're trying.
It does.
So with making that difference, do you sort of convene with the, you said a group of four do this?
Yeah, there's four of us total.
Is there a strategic approach to how do you sort of decide like where you're going to cover? Do you get information prior to sort of deployment for those, however you do it? Do you collect data to sort of track like what kind of impact you're doing?
Yeah, so a little bit of everything. There are some requests that come from our higher-ups, you know, the captains, specific areas that they want us to check. Sometimes we know where the high crime areas kind of are, especially in, around here, the Speedway Corridor. So we'll just kind of hit those spots if we want to. We don't necessarily collect data. I'm sure that's probably available somewhere. We don't personally collect that data. There are some locations I've personally noticed that have a lot less foot traffic through them.
Once you've kind of done it for like a period of time.
Yeah, exactly. Certain electrical boxes, like Grant and Alvernon, for instance, you know, a lot less foot traffic in some of those locations.
What's the draw of the electrical boxes?
You know, I'm not really sure. Some of them, they're able to have... Uh-huh. Some of them are able to, like, charge their phones and stuff. Certain ones, they can break open. I think it's kind of just a little hidden area, you know, maybe shade. But, yeah, that is a common one, though, even the one just down the street here, so...
Okay.
an Adrian, just to add a couple, just to add to the zebras. The zebras are not tied to the 911 calls. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff is proactive. And that comes from us as commanders. We go to your meetings, the 5th and Albert on the 29th Street Coalition, the AGI meeting. We get some of that information from the community members saying, there is so much drugs happening over here at 5th and Alvernon or 29th and Columbus. So what we do is we direct zebras, I'm all, one of your spot checks, can you please go out here? We're getting a lot of drug activity. But the electrical boxes, it's funny because being part of the 5th and Alvernon Coalition, we have that electrical box right there in the corner and people just sit on it. And my thing, I mean, I'm sorry, Speedway in Alvernon, near your house.
Right.
People like to sit right on top of it. There's one right there by the McDonald's too at Speedway in Alvernon. But just like Adrian said, Officer Harrison said, is that they like to also hide behind there, do whatever they need to do. So it's a good spot for us to do our spot checks. Mm-hmm. But when we go to these ward council meetings, associations, that's where we get a lot of our information. And a lot of that's directed to our officers to, in your daily spot checks, this is where we're getting our information. So we're getting our problems. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. You're telling us when we pass it forward.
Tony, something that I noticed, because you know where I live, on First Street, right on the south side of that Speedway gas station at Speedway and Alvernon, on First Street, which is my street, there's a big green TEP box at the dip there, even if you probably know of that. And I see chalk writing or writing, and maybe they're making messages to each other, I think, sometimes. So I try to go out there with paint and cover it over. But I think, I don't know if it's a communication, if they do that or not. But I think maybe it is, so then I try to cover it over.
With paint?
I do, yeah.
Isn't that graffiti?
Well, I just,
this is,
I'm like, are they green for a reason, and have you concurred with TEP?
I used to try to report to TEP, come clean your damn box, and they didn't, so I did.
All right.
I live there.
Gotcha.
Right, Tony?
Yes, ma'am.
So when you guys drive around, are you in a marked vehicle?
Yes, we're in marked patrol vehicles, and we're wearing this uniform.
And are you targeting individuals or gathering intel or both? What are you doing?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. So occasionally, you know, if we see a group of people trespassing or doing some kind of other kind of petty misdemeanor crime, we'll address that. If any of them have any kind of felony warrants or committing felony crimes, we'll arrest them. We have various wanted people that we'll try and actually go after. So yeah, just a little bit of everything.
Because of the nature of these are more serious offenders, I would imagine. You think that zebra units have more contact with OPS than maybe regular officers?
No, not yet. Like I said, a lot of the people we go after aren't necessarily like wanted for shootings or anything like that. It's only me and my partner. We try and do what we can without having to take patrol resources from the field. So people, more like felony property crime, stuff like that, whatever we can get away with doing safely and making that arrest. And, you know, there's several units, too, throughout the city that go after those very violent offenders, and they have significant more resources, too. So we kind of stay, every so often we'll come across someone if we just happen to, but we don't specifically target very violent suspects, typically.
Maybe I missed this at the beginning, but does every team have their own zebras units?
Yes, yeah.
Every team has
They don't all have the same hours we do.
No,
but
I'm just saying generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Any specialized training for your unit?
Not to get into the unit. Me and my partner, we're both field training, field trainers, though. I've done rifle training, so mostly just they like to see a lot of proactive work if you're putting in for that unit, which me and my partner both really like to do. So, yeah, there's no specific zebra training, though. Anything else?
This has nothing to do with specifically anything, maybe the work that you're doing, but I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. The blue flashing lights that some of the businesses are using, how does that work? Do you know? Do you happen to know?
I'm
speculating that it's a deterrent.
Yeah,
I would imagine. But
I think that's the primary purpose. how effective it is. I don't know.
You could probably speak personally on that because we worked on the blue light together.
They put one in, again, at that Speedway gas station, which is right on my street. And along with the flashing blue light and the camera, which we assume is running and not just a fake, they had an announcement that went off every few hours that said, you are being watched by this cat, and it kept neighbors awake. And so, thank goodness for Tony, contacted the manager of the Speedway gas station and said, turn off, it's just bothering the neighbors horribly. Yeah, my immediate neighbors were just losing their minds. So they called me and I got with Tony, and Tony applied a little pressure, so they killed the announcement.
It is a good first, I guess, deterrent, because when people see it, and then some of those blue lights, they have cameras, and somebody's monitoring that camera, and they'll basically say, we see you, get off the property, you were told to leave, and it'll echo, and I remember hearing that a couple of times, but that's if you pay for the extreme version of that. There is the one with the repeating message every 45 minutes to 40 minutes that does that. So it lets people know that they're being watched.
Yeah.
But just after a while, after everybody knows, well, nothing's going to happen to me, and nothing happens.
Right. So my question, I'm in a new development, so there's some construction going on. So the development would pay for that camera service, and there's somebody who's actually monitoring the cameras. Is that how it works?
Depends on what package they went through.
Got it. Okay, so if they would get that from a company that...
It's a private company
that
builds.
Okay.
And for the longest time, they thought TPD were running.
I was wondering if you guys were involved in those.
No, we don't. Okay. That's a private company that they go through with that.
Are people being cited as a result of what you see on video?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Are people being cited as a result of what you may see on video?
Not that I know.
The farm cameras are outlawed in the city of Tucson, so I don't understand the kind of using that.
Not that I know of. The one that we were working on at Speedway Algernon wasn't recording the video at all, so there was nothing that we can use. It was just kind of, in the beginning, it was being monitored, and then it stopped to just a blue light and a continuous voice every 40 minutes.
Not Christmas music.
No.
I've heard that as a deterrent.
But I've heard that, you know, both sides of the spectrum, that it's a great item, it works, and then I heard that it doesn't work, so
people
it depends.
Don't care about red lights. Do you think they care about blue lights?
Only when they're put together, right?
Never mind. I have to say that I apologize.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Good, sir.
Thanks, Adrian. So be sure to keep going around Algernon Park. It's been pretty cool about 2 months. So thank you.
All right, so next item in the agenda will be called to the audience. At this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board may not address the specific concern at this meeting. However, the board may, at its discretion, make it a future agenda item, at which time there can be a discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member. Each person is limited to 3 minutes.
No, online folks. No.
All right. Moving on to the review of TPD investigations, in accordance with Section 108-88F of the Mayor and Council mandate, the board may only review those charges specified in the best investigation in order to comment on the fairness and thoroughness of the internal investigation and to report any concerns regarding that investigation to those specified in the mandate. And the first case is 230210. This is the case with the domestic violence call where the complainant got mistakenly arrested. I had any questions, comments? Would anybody would like to make a motion?
I'll always make a discussion about it because I'm just a talker, but if anybody just wants to let it go, we can do that too.
Can you make a comment? Because I have a question.
Sure.
And I'm trying to find it before I ask. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, because again, yeah, I'll always talk about it.
Please save your time.
All right. Okay, so Angelique, let's see, is that Angelica? Was complaining against Sergeant Robinson. Anyway, it was a domestic violence case, and it was she and her boyfriend, and she was saying that he was the aggressor, and he was saying she was the aggressor, and the poor little boy watching the video. And one thing that struck me was I was very surprised that the little boy was kept in the apartment while she was being questioned, while he was whimpering. I just thought that was just wrong. I just thought maybe they should have taken him out of the apartment or taken her out to question her and have another officer. There seemed to be enough officers watched him. Just having him be present and whimpering during her questioning right there at the entry of the apartment, if anybody else watched it and saw that part, I just thought it was inappropriate, and I felt sorry for the little boy a lot. So there was that comment and aspect of it that I sort of wanted to question and discuss. Is that how it's normally done, or did anybody else agree with me that the little boy should have been taken away from, or they should have taken away? You're nodding, so I guess you agree.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I thought the same thing.
I'm curious, what is the standard of practice, right?
There's no reason for him to be there.
It's a legitimate question and fair point. The initial statement when you go to a domestic violence investigation is you have to somewhat assess what you're dealing with. You can't just start grabbing people and taking them in and out. And so I think that was part of this unique situation, is they're kind of evaluating, and especially it was an escalated event with a lot of pointing fingers and a lot of statements and a lot of questions going on. And so again, in best case scenario, we would move a child to the side. But again, with parents being present, there's only so much room that we would take away, unless there's physical violence that we would say, my job is to make you physically safe. Like if the parent says, I want my child sitting on my lap, unless I feel there's a reason to keep them removed, you can't. And so there has to be that kind of a balance of, if they're not in a physical safety issue, then we would be evaluating it, which is what happened in this case, where they were listening to all the people inside of the house, and we were trying to evaluate what the circumstances were. Yeah. So best case scenario, yes, it just happens to be as it's unfolding, not always.
And at first it did seem like, I don't know, to me it seemed like, well, she was somewhat credible. Mm-hmm. And then you keep on going, like you said, and you're like, okay, something gives.
Well, and I try to be careful when I say it this way, but officers go to domestic violence investigations. That's one of the largest investigations that we repeat through your entire career.
Yeah.
And you would never believe what you think you've seen. Like I said, you get to a point that you're going, I can almost imagine what the story's about to be, or the allegation's about to be, or the evidence is going to prove X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
Because what some people do in their households is very surprising to what maybe we were raised around or not. So
yeah,
it really is more of an evaluation tool when you're deciding, because that's one thing about the state of Arizona, is that if there is probable cause found for domestic violence to have been proven a crime, then there is a mandatory arrest. So it's not discretionary. And that's why in some cases, if it's he said, she said fight, where it's two people slapping each other, you know, usually it's somebody throws something and the other one slaps somebody, or they slap and then they throw, both people could be arrested based on the circumstances of violating the domestic violence laws. So that is similar to what happened in this case.
I did appreciate that the officer directly connected with the child to sort of, you know, give him a sense of safety in that. I wish it could have happened a little bit more, but that's the nurture in me. But I thought that it was really nice to be able to see that and at least get the confidence of the child that the situation was. I felt bad because that child was hyperventilating at one point. That was worrisome, but yeah.
And she, Angelica, presented like a normal person with her version and was pretty calm and presented well. And so you would tend to want to believe that she was the victim, and then you hear the other side of the story, and then you hear from the child and things evolve.
Well, and it's also unique too, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, man, mm-hmm. is the situation also when you're seeing visible marks and a statement. it's somewhat contradictory to not visible marks versus credible possibly on its face but not marked. And then the other one's going, well, you can't deny this, that somebody scratched me, grabbed me, whatnot. And again, none of us are able to go back into the past to say which order did those things occur in. Because we see that a lot of times with adult children or, you know, other larger children, you know, teenagers sometimes, where the parent's trying to restrain them, but they end up getting bruised, and the parent is considered the aggressor, when in fact, what they were doing was trying to calm the child down, and all you're seeing is a bruise or an injury, and it's hard to discern which one led to the other one. And that's the unique thing with domestic violence. And sadly, nobody wants to have to take a statement from a young child, but again, at certain cases, that might be the only person you have that can offer some level of insight, even through their own young eyes.
So to the initial statement question, normally you would try to get the child out of the kind of questioning area, if possible, but because it was just the very beginning and the child happened to be in the front room there with her, the questioning had to start before you could even think about maybe distancing the child.
Yes, I would say best case scenario, that's what you would want to do in best case scenario. But again, as it unfolds, sometimes it's quite clear that you show up and in the first 30 seconds, the person's so aggressive, you're putting them in handcuffs and removing them from the area, which calms the situation. But then there's plenty of times you walk into someone's house and the person who threw something is sitting there drinking a cup of coffee while the other one's sitting on the couch and they're not talking and you're going, you don't know exactly what you walked into and the child's hyperventilating and you're having to read the situation a little bit more before you start removing people from the property or from the area.
Gotcha.
So to piggyback on that, the for Officer Gorilla or Gorilla, for incomplete investigation, that it was sustained, it was because that part was not investigated, right? Like who said who it was, he said, she said situation?
Well, it was more about the sister's comments, not between the, because there was also a situation with the sister having had made threats. And again, this was something that's why he was corrected, was because he should have recognized that those statements were being made. Honestly, I think in this particular case, he had gotten the tunnel vision of, I'm dealing with a domestic violence situation that's right here in front of me, involving these people with marks, and they're making statements of who did what. But I think the sister was also present and had made comments about threats with a weapon. Yeah. And that was kind of the situation, was it got resolved because the other officer found her holding the weapon, detained her, you know, and separated her. And simply, I think he just made the mistake of not hearing the conversation exactly with, hey, what did your sister do? I'm here today about you two fighting, not what your sister was doing. And that was the mistake, and he was counseled on that.
Awesome. Thank you. Can I get a motion? A motion?
I'll make a motion. That case number 23-0210 was evaluated fair and thoroughly.
Second that motion.
Can I get a roll call, please?
Jaime Tadeo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kay Coleman?
Aye.
Nancy Huck?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Moving on to case number 23-0329. This is a case where the officers were responding to an inquiry about a disturbance. Furthermore, this is about the lady that was put in handcuffs when she was trying to go into the apartment. I will say about this was so easy to follow until it's like I started seeing repeat pages of like the same thing. So I started reading and then the next page will be the same thing. Did anybody see that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that like normal? I mean, is that how this works? Or?
We try to avoid that when we archive the cases, but occasionally the files will get mashed up with additional copies. And we would prefer that everything even more so gets in there versus something being lost. So it does happen.
Yeah, because there were 179 pages and there were, sort of duplicate information a number of times, which just scroll through.
But besides that, I thought that everything made sense. And I'm kind of glad that for... Can I just speak openly about my initial thought when I saw the video? I forget who was the officer, Lesniewski.
Christina Lesniewski.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when I was watching that body-worn camera, I noticed that one of the officer Bihan, I don't know how to pronounce things that are not Mexican.
Oh, that's just fine. It's Bihan.
Bihan. That there was, I'm trying to say without sounding like a total idiot.
Say it, we won't think you're a total idiot. Just say it.
Okay, so there's a thing that, I don't know if it's general knowledge or not, but when you see somebody, not necessarily an officer, but you just see like this dude with the big old mustache, it's like, oh, that guy's a douche. Like, that was my first thought about Officer Bihan before reading anything, because I saw the mustache, and that was like my...
That's your bias.
That was my bias. That's my sort of bias, right?
Okay.
And then I go into this, and then I see all this, and I was like, oh, I was so right, and I wish I was not right. But everything else, besides that comment, I don't know, I just think to make a comment, I had a bias about a specific person, mm-hmm. and then I see that, you know, they were making comments about, like, people like that. It doesn't sit well with me, because what do you mean with people like that? It was one of the interviews, whoever was investigating the case, and then they were interviewing Officer Bihan.
People like that, like how he looks, or people...
About the detainees, right?
Yeah. It was something about, yeah, I should have not said that, but, you know, when people are... Okay. Poor people like, it was like people that are like that. That kind of just did not...
That's
like
a bias,
right? I feel like I wanted to know, like, what did you mean by that? What did you mean by people like that? Because I think both people were people of color.
And it can be interpreted in many ways, probably. Like, people who behave like that, people who respond like that, people who don't take orders like that. I don't know, but I see what you're saying.
I'm looking for it right now, but... I would have loved to see a follow-up question as a person of color wanted to be asked, like, what do you mean by that comment? Like, what do you mean, like, people that behave like that or people that look like that?
During the interview process.
Right. Yeah.
Investigation process.
Yeah.
After the fact and in further investigating, the way I perceived it, it was talking about the banter that was going back and forth between them. She was... calling him names, and he returned the banter. So it was like people like that. That's why I was talking in that discretion, talking about how large she was. So that's why he was disciplined for that banter going back and forth with her.
Yeah.
In library world, we call that the reference interview. Right, Jenny?
Yeah.
To get clarification. So I think, I would agree, like in that case, it would have been helpful for the investigator to sort of, well, what exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I found the quote. Going forward, and I'll remember that there's no point in communicating with people like that or even just making these slight statements, you know? So, yeah, I think I would have just liked to, like, see a question saying, what do you mean by that?
And it could have been people who are uncooperative, because, I mean, that was my first take, is my goodness, here are officers, but then again, you know, I have my opinion, which is pretty good of officers, but officers come, they're trying to defuse something, and for you to just battle them and be rude to them, it's not going to help anybody. It's just going to escalate the situation. So... people like them, it could be combative people. That is maybe what he was meaning.
Right.
Combative people that won't cooperate or just let us try to do our jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be that kind of reference as well.
It could be a ton of things, and then the end result is that we're all human and we all screw up and we all do wrong things and say wrong things. I mean, it's just human nature.
Yeah.
And when you battle with somebody, especially with somebody with a gun, one of the best
the best advice my brother gave me when he was a cop was, when a cop talks to you, don't say a damn thing. Just shut up and listen to him. And heed his advice and don't battle, because he's just, we're the same. Kind of. Not exactly the same. Not even. Everyone's going to have a bad day and everyone's going to screw up. And you probably know what he meant, but we don't know what he meant. We don't know what he meant.
Yeah. But that's the opportunity.
I understand, but just don't say it. You know, but at that time too, you have to like chill. I mean, and I'm not them. I'm not a cop. I never could be a cop. I would have buried people. I couldn't do it. And it's a very tough job, but it doesn't excuse a lot of the stuff they do, obviously. But it doesn't excuse the crap we do as non-police officers. So we push them to their limit, and sometimes they blow over. So I understand exactly what he's saying, because I'm Mexican-American, I'm Chicano, and I live a brown life. I see things in color. I don't see things in white. I don't think in white. I think bilingual, literally bilingual. I speak in my head bilingually. It's just hard.
So
I don't, there's no real, it's going to happen. That's going to happen.
Yeah, and my own personal, this is my own personal belief and, like, opinion. Going full circle with the whole bias comment that I meant earlier, right, with the guy with the mustache, yeah. Like he's a douche, right? So, if I'm in that position of those two ladies, and I see a douche coming towards me, and I'm like, I'm not going to engage because I just told you it was not me. And then, like, and then all of this happens back and forth, and then, reading comments like that is, I think I would respond differently for someone who would come up to me more friendly. I was like, "Hey, how's it going? Good night." It was like,
"But go back 1 minute. You just said when that douche is coming towards me, you already ID'd him,
right?" And it's a real thing, and it happens. And
I understand that, but you know you're wrong from the get go.
Well,
you know that you're wrong already because you called him a douche and you've never met him.
Exactly.
You know that, right?
And then we turn around and then we see this.
I know, but you guessed it right.
And then it kind of makes, like, shit, I was right.
Yeah, I'm not giving him credit. I'm not giving him relief. I'm not giving him anything like that. I'm just saying, back up, retrace your thought pattern. For me, this is me. Because I've done exactly what you, I still do it. I've done exactly what you do. Have done, and I still do it. And I have to watch myself, okay? This person who's walking towards me, a homeless person who I give money to, I give $2 to, I'm sorry, I know some people don't like me to do it, but I give $2 to everybody who's in hands reach. And I don't question any longer what they're going to do with it. Because I can't judge. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they do the best thing with it. But at the same time, I can't judge. I can tell you all their stories just by guessing, just by looking at their color and looking at their size and their shape and whatever they do. I can guess what their background kind of is. I'm going to be wrong 50% of it. I can guess because I'm 62 and I kind of have an idea. But I could be completely wrong on all four of them.
Right.
And you could be too.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
The point of this comment is that there's a bias already. And then stuff like this happens and it's in, you know. But
it came true.
Yeah. But moving back to the actual case, it was easy to follow, even though it was lengthy. Everything was well documented, and I think the outcome was satisfying. So, do we have a motion?
Yeah, I'll move that we find case 23-0329 was resolved fair and thorough.
Can I get a second?
I'll second it.
I do have one follow-up question. They mentioned CI or CIT training, and I know a lot of acronyms, but I don't know if I know that one.
Was two CIT coordinators for the department's crisis intervention training. It's a 40-hour class that helps with identifying common mental health crisis or mental illness that is in the community, and then how to de-escalate situations and have a better understanding what those people are going through, and understand it might be a criminal situation or disciplinary situation, maybe that person needs help. And so through that 40-hour class, we have different experts from all the different avenues, from like we have the doctor from Banner South come in and speak, we have the head doc for CRC come in and speak, we have clinicians come in, we have real life families that have had bad interactions with police and their children, and they come in and tell their story and have that back and forth talk with the officers. So it's overall our goal at that class, which we actually have next week. So if it's something, if you guys are interested in it, I would say the next time we have a class, would invite you guys to go. It is 40 hours, so it's a long class. It's a full week. But the Friday is scenario-based, and basically they have to, we have role players, and they have to pass and use the right stuff, the right attitude and stuff. We've actually had people fail because they refuse to take part. So it's not just, hey, you go and you get a free pass. But I'd really encourage you, if it's something you're interested in, the next one we have, I think, is in September. Love to have you go. And our goal is to have officers come in one way and come out in a different way of understanding that there's a whole nother way to deal with situations, and understanding that there could be a mental illness as a part of the situation. And it isn't just discipline or not. It's maybe there's discipline still necessary, but we can help on the, with wraparound services on the backside. And sometimes that's making sure that those people are getting help and assistance after jail, or even sometimes, is jail the right place to go? Maybe it needs mental health treatment, or reconnect with services, or introduce to services. It's just a whole different way of looking forward. I think the national standard is to have 30% of your department through CIT, and I think last I checked, we're at like 76%, 82%. It's very important for us, because we, with our MIST unit, mental health unit, are you guys familiar with that one? I mean, we were the tip of the spear by many traits, because we realized early on that we can't arrest mental illness out of people, and that wasn't doing the best for that person, the community, or the family. So it's looking at how we can do better for that person. And it's a double win, because if they get help and have a better life, they're also not causing 911 calls, and we move forward. So it's just the forward thinking, and that's where I think the Tucson Police Department's definitely tipped the spear, seeing how we can do things differently. And it's not always with the hammer. Sometimes it's with a little finesse and seeing what's best for the individuals. So that's overall quick down and dirty with crisis intervention training.
There's really no downside to that, other than it's a 40-hour training. So why are they not 100% trained in CIT? All the officers are eventually going to come up on somebody who's got a mental health problem. That's when it de-escalates. They would know better, having been to that. But 40 hours is a lot of time to keep people off the streets. And that's always been the problem with law enforcement. They can't take everybody off the streets that many hours to devote to CIT. But I tell you, I've done cases where I reviewed them, and the officer was just wholly inappropriate dealing with somebody that was clearly in mental health distress. And what I've pitched for, and I've been successful in having done, is recommending that officer specifically, who's already demonstrated a problem, not recognizing and knowing the right way to deal with somebody in crisis, to go through CIT.
That could be built into sort of the process of, I forget what you call it, but it's like as an option to, you know, just putting the, here's your sustained and misconduct or whatever, but they get the opportunity to get the training.
Can I say CIT, one thing we pride ourselves on, it's 100% optional. We've had political prisoners that have to go to it, and they're miserable, the class is miserable, and it affects the class. So we've other agencies across the nation have said, it's 20 hours and it's in the academy before officers have any idea of what the life is outside. We try to do it, you have to be on, I believe, 2 years. I think we lowered it down to 2 years. You need to be in the field so you have some basics of what you're going to be coming into.
Gotcha.
Because if you come out, you don't understand the importance of this training.
Right.
But it's 100% optional, and that's why we're so prideful in that we've had so many go through as an optional basis. We also have, we host it, TPD does, but I think we're up to 15 different agencies that attend. So it is regional. We have Davis-Monthan, we have Oro Valley, we have... I had to make sure I'm not saying something. Mm-hmm. We have tribal nations. We've offered it to... the FBI has sent people, Border Patrol, and it's across Southern Arizona. We have people come in, and it's... I like to say the best thing is it's I like a Beyonce concert. If she's still popular, I forget. My daughter got out of the house, so I forget who's popular nowadays. But it's usually when we release it and say, hey, we've opened it up, it's literally in about 12 minutes was the fastest that we filled up our spots. And our class is maxed out at 50 people. And we have a waiting list, and it's quite the event. It's a lot of people, a lot of moving parts. And we only host two a year, and they want us to put out to three. But it's so much effort that goes into bringing all the resources, because it's not us. It's taught by people in the public. It's taught by people that suffer from mental illness. It's people that have bad experience with the police. We go over videos of, okay, and it's videos that aren't fun to watch. And I've seen the video probably over 40 times now, and every time it's horrible to watch. But then you sit there and you get these people to see it at the beginning class, at the end, they're like, oh, I see everywhere in the place that they could have done something different. They could have. And so it's just kind of getting them to realize that there's always an opportunity to de-escalate. And the joy is that it doesn't have to be someone suffering from mental illness to just remind people, active listening, see a way to dissolve the situation, and maybe there's a better way to deal with it. Just have their mindset change to it's not always the, finesse different situations. So, yep. Love to have you go if you can.
Is there any part of the 40-hour full week that would be beneficial for us, the way you said, like the last day is role playing?
I think it's the whole thing, because the schedule changes every week just based on people's, because again, 40 hours and 30 of those are presentation by tons of different people.
Okay.
So it's difficult to say, hey, this class is good. Really is. It builds on it from the beginning, because we even start out with the history of mental illness, where we started to when they had a walkway across in the same asylum that you would pay to throw cheese balls at people in there back in the old days to now. The only mental health facility that is a lock-in one is the Arizona State Hospital, and how kind of go over in many ways how broken the system is in Arizona and across the nation. So it's, you know, we start with foundation, build, and go through there, and the classes work together. So I know 40 is a lot, but I guarantee if you go, you're going to come out and go, that was well worth it. So
there is some basic in Recruit Academy.
Mental health first aid.
So there is some that's offered long before the 42 hours, 2 years later.
Mental health first aid is like an 8-hour, it might be even lower now, but it's just a basic introduction to signs of people that might be having a mental health crisis. It's like, how to identify, are they schizophrenic, is it schizoaffective disorder, is it just bipolar, is it this, that? And it's not to be a clinician by any means at the end of it, but it's just simply to say, there might be something else going on. I mean, it could be just drug use. The guy could be just an a-hole, you know? It's just, hey, there's more options than he's either combative and an a-hole, or he's just nice. Well, hey, now you look at this whole other world, there could be a lot of other options. Just try and get a basic foundation to get the officers to have that confidence to speak, slow down, and see that there's more options than just one. So that's the mental health first aid. That's mandatory in the academy.
Well, if there's something, again, that would be relevant for us.
All 40 hours.
All 40 hours. Okay.
I'm just saying.
September.
It'd be worth it. I think it's September, and I'll have dates for you on the next summer.
Please let us know.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sea Parks had presentations in the past about CIT programs. It's been a little while now.
Well, they just had one.
Yeah.
Look how good that was. He has to schedule it.
He opposite to avoid this topic at all. But you've got the expert right here.
Yes.
I mean,
clearly.
You missed him.
What's that?
I don't even miss you.
I was in it for 5 years when we started out with just three individuals. So it was really, I mean, it was where we were fighting our own department. They were like, you're taking two officers off the street. This is dumb. This is stupid. And then once they realized the fact of what we were doing, and they're like, hold on, I don't need to take those calls anymore. Great, we need more of you. And then they're like, well, hold on, I actually see the benefit. It's not just, you don't always see the crime and the bad. You start seeing the fact that you're helping people, and it's another way of policing, is being that positive role. Because a lot of times we're the first ones that respond to bad situations, even if it is just a mental health issue. Before clinicians can come in, we've got to make it safe. And sometimes it's getting the person that's all riled up, getting them calm and saying, okay, now, let's bring in the experts. Our whole goal is to give them a higher level of care. Do what's best for them and the situation. It doesn't always say they get out because they're mentally ill or have a mental health crisis. They get out of being held accountable. It's just making sure it isn't just one. It's getting full wraparound services and do what's best for that individual, that family, the community around them, and the community as a whole. I mean, it's a very holistic approach to policing and making sure that we're doing the right thing for the right person. All 40 hours.
To get that kind of detail in a 1 hour DPD presentation during your, you're not going to do it, obviously. And if 40 may be too much, you know, as we look at additional training opportunities put on by DPD, like we've done in the past, maybe we can find a decent block instead. You've already been through the weaponry. You know, instead of going through all that again, maybe a larger than a 1 hour block, but certainly shorter than 40, and then we can invite officer in and go through some.
And what I can do is I can get a list of our classes. They're usually classes the same, but they rotate each class just because of timing and availability. But maybe you see, hey, this is what would look work good for us. We were interested in these classes, and we can get it set up. So. But we can make some work if all 40 isn't wanted.
Well, it's just tough.
But I highly recommend.
It's tough for us too, I get it.
No, I get you.
He's a man. I mean, you got the.
I mean, it's just great to. It's so terrific to hear how TPD has been sort of a leader in this area, right? And it's being adopted and implemented. It's just kind of cool.
Nationally.
Oh, so you look at the mental health unit, the MIST unit that Sergeant Jason Winsky kind of started and has had this thing. We became a learning site through the BJA. So they sent departments from all over the nation to come here and going, wait a minute. You actually work together with mental health. Wait, you actually talk to their provider and their clinician, and you know their family, and you know this, and you don't just take them to jail. It's like, no, look at all these resources, and it wasn't just us. We realized we're just a cog in the wheel, and you've got, you know, the mental health facilities, you know, Hope, Kodak, La Frontera, all those, and then you got the hospitals, you got all the people. I remember sitting down at a table with 30 different people from different agencies, doctors, all that, for one person.
One person.
Now, the person was a handful, not sure. Gonna lie. She may have got a restraining order from call 911, it felt like, because I was her handler. I know it's bad to say, but I was the one that she called. And I would be off on a Thursday, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, my voicemail was maxed out, and I had, like, usually about 3 hours worth of voicemails. And it was, some of it was terror, some of it was just wanting to talk, some of it was just gibberish, but the fact is I was her point of contact. And so realizing those individuals are out there and suffering, and sometimes the families just go, not my problem.
Right.
Now the streets deal with them, the community deals with them. Well, we're going to interact with them, so we want to make sure that we have our officers prepared appropriately to interact with those individuals to realize there's better resources available and make sure officers know the resources and say, hey, perfect for the CRC or La Frontera, let me get you in contact with the manager of this facility, let's get you, and that's the joy of it. But it was nationally recognized in all of them. There's numerous times that other departments go, I can't believe you guys do this here. How? And it starts with the chief, and it starts with that, and then breaking down our own to say, this is better, and then build the relationships with the community and the mental health facility. So it's a proud thing that I'm very proud of being a part of.
Thank you.
You guys find the value in that. Certainly it's within the parameters of what the ordinance provides for Seat Parking. If you can make recommendations to mayor and council to consider increasing the MIST unit, if that's what you feel might be appropriate.
What is it called, the MIST unit?
Well, we have evidence that it works, right? So we have the evidence that it works.
Yeah, I remember when I first was on the board, 2016 to 19, I remember Jason Winsky giving us a presentation back then. And at that time, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, how smart. I mean, what a great resource and what a good, just for humanity, to help these people. So, yes, thank you for what you do. And, yeah, I'd love to do some of the training, if not all 40. All right.
This is.
Okay, so we left off with...
We have a motion on the floor?
We had a motion, but not a second.
We had a motion, we had a second.
Yeah,
we did. A comment.
Yeah, we're all done with that, and then I went off on the CIT.
Yeah. What was the second?
Roll call.
Yeah. Oh, it was roll call?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye, Tony.
I'm at Daleo.
Aye.
Ana Bonillas.
Aye.
Faye Calhoun.
Aye.
Nancy Huff.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Moving on to next agenda item. Oh, case number.
Sorry.
Case number 24-0109. This is the case where the two CSOs responded to an accident on a busy intersection, and the complaint was about their, lack of experience and
that they could not reach out to the other officers.
And my only comment about that.
Oh, the traffic, yes. Traffic was not under control.
Was it?
Yeah,
was it? So it was. Did somebody say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, my comment was that I thought it was great that this Matthew Bayer, who was the one that filed the complaint, wanted it to be an informal complaint because he realized there were CSOs that were not that experienced. And he wanted it to be an educational situation for them so they just learn from it to do a better job. Yeah. So I thought that was valid.
That conversation and, was cool.
Yeah, and was good of him not to be overly angry and just say they should have done better. So just educating.
The officer explained it extremely well to him.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I agree.
It's your call.
Agree.
I just had one question on this case. I noticed that there was not a allegations and findings page. It's because it was not a formal complaint. Do they usually not get categorized as EC1 or EC2?
There should still be allegations.
Okay, so now that I saw on here, it's like on the corner, top left corner, it's a C2, but I usually have like the allegations, findings, unfounded and sustained letters.
Yeah, on page 2, it lists allegations, failure to take appropriate action, and then it lists none, no violation, CSC verbal counseling. And I'm on the.
Oh, my bad. Okay, never mind.
I guess a couple pages off the checklist.
Never mind. Any more questions, comments? Can I get a motion?
I will make a motion regarding case number 24-0109 that it was reviewed fair and thoroughly.
I'll second that.
Can I get a roll call, please?
I'm in that room.
Aye.
I
abstain. I didn't get to review this case.
Kate Colhoun?
Aye.
Nancy Huff?
Aye.
Motion passes 3-0. 4-0.
All right, thank you. Moving on to next agenda item. It is Tucson Police Department. In accordance with provisions of the state open public meeting law, these items were listed on the agenda in order to allow TPD to present a brief summary of current events pursuant to provisions of ARS section 38-431.02. The board may not propose, discuss, deliberate, or take action at this meeting on any matter in the updates unless the specific matter is properly noticed for legal action at a subsequent meeting. And TPD updates regarding events or developments relating to the department during the prior month.
Chair, if I could intercede just for just a second, please. Assistant Chief Shainer could not be here today. I believe some emails went around advising. So if you want to, my suggestion is you do combine A and B, which would be a TPD update and /OPS report. We've got the captain here that can combine that information if you like.
Yes?
It's a great
okay.
suggestion.
Thank you. So, and agenda item of Office of Professional Standards updates regarding events or developments relating to the Office of Professional Standards during the prior month.
I brought some stats with me. During March, internal affairs of the OPS had 150 open cases. Yeah, it's been busy in there. 25% approximately of those are property damage related cases, traffic accidents, lost property, completed part of property, those sorts of things. Another 50% are formal external or internal investigations, which typically my office will handle. And then then the final 25% is informal stuff, ECTs, EC3s. In March, we conducted 10 recorded employee interviews. It doesn't include the witness interviews with community members or the intake interviews. We were able to close 37 cases in March, but unfortunately, we onboarded 40 cases. So we're treading water in there. I don't know if this has been discussed in these meetings before, but OPS reviews a random sample of use of force reports from the academy. So what typically happens in the field is when there's an application of force, a sergeant will go out and investigate the application of force, write a use of force report, submit it to the academy for essentially archive and make sure data points are collected. My office takes a random sample of those cases and make sure that they are complete, that the investigation was done completely, and that the form was filled out correctly. So we did 5 of those reviews in March as well. The last piece I got is part of the reason we're so far behind is we lost Sergeant Zach Bargoot.
Bargoot?
Bargoot was promoted to lieutenant. Oh. So, we are onboarding we did onboard Dave Fritsch. Ferguson. We're onboarding Sergeant Alex Ferguson from the East Side, who was a robbery detective for 7 years. So he knows his way around investigations. We're getting him at the end of the month. So hopefully we can clear out some of this backlog that we've got going on.
Thank you, Captain. Next agenda item, number 8, Office of Independent Police Auditor, monthly contacts. This report covers TPD-related contacts by members by the public with the Office of the Independent Police Auditor during the previous month.
Right, thank you. Much like OPS has been slammed with cases, I have too. And I get a lot from Mayor, Council, City Manager's Office, which may not be complaints specifically, but more call for service. How come I can't get a report? How come I can't get a property? And some of the complaints are just so fantastical that I wind up doing a lot of triage. And so I probably refer 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4 complaints that I get to OPS. Others are not. Now, if they insist that they want to file a complaint, I'll submit it. It may not go anywhere, but generally, once you explain that really what they're looking for is not going to come from contact with OPS, they're generally okay with that.
Being the public.
Correct. Absolutely. A lot of those cases are what TPD refers to as number 6 cases, which are cases that have mental illness. A lot of those I do not refer on to OPS. That they're in need of really other services, I think, and some of their complaints, they're not going to be based in reality. And when it's that obvious, I refer a lot to MIST, so I don't even contact OPS. I just make that referral straight away to the MIST unit and say, this is somebody to look at. They're not counselors, but remember, they're officers. So there's going to be a law enforcement connection somewhere. If it's not a law enforcement connection, if someone's just, you know, what lottery numbers do I play tomorrow? That's probably going to miss. So, MIST, unfortunately, they're overworked, and there's way too much need for them, quite frankly, in my opinion. And they spend, I think, maybe now more an inordinate amount of time serving petitions. You know what that means, Darrell?
Okay. So, petitions are basically if someone gets. They go to court, they have a hearing, and they get put on court-ordered treatment. Basically, they get, I'm trying to filter out all the common jargon that I have and try to make it as easy as possible. They basically have, when they're released and they get set up on their medications and everything, they get released back into the world, and then they're expected to meet these certain criteria, meet with their clinicians, take their medications, and so on and so forth. Well, when you know these individuals struggle to take their medications, the process for them to get prescriptions refilled is difficult. So a lot of times when they don't show up for their appointment, the Superior Court will send us paperwork that says this person has been revocated or Right? I think that's the right name right now. Yeah. The changes. But basically, then it comes to us as the MIST unit, and then we go out and we search for that individual. We pick them up and we take them back to a mental health facility, usually Banner South or the CRC, and say, hey, here you go with this signed paperwork. So then it forces them back onto their care. So that's that. And then also there's application for involuntary evaluation. So that is basically if you have an emergency petition, which is there's a danger to themselves or others right now. Right now, if you leave, there's possible consequences. For an application for an involuntary evaluation, or PED is what they call it, it's danger to self, danger to others, persistently, acutely disabled, or gravely disabled. It's a slower process, but anyone can fill that out against anyone. But to prevent, like, you know, the ex-boyfriend from filling out on the new boyfriend type thing, there's steps and checks and balances, so it gets sent off, it gets turned in, you have clinicians that try to make contact with that individual, and they say, hey, this is good to go, or no, this is all made up, and it stops there. If it goes there, then it goes to a doctor to review, then doctor can stop it or keep it going on, then it goes to a Supreme Court judge that can stop it or go on. If they do it all the way around, then it comes back to the mental health unit that says, okay, now we have 14 days to go out and locate this person and get them turned over to mental health facility. If we miss those 14 days, it all comes to a screeching halt and we get to do the process all over again. So many moving parts, but those are the quick, down and dirty. Title 36, ARS Title 36 just gives us the ability to take someone against their will to a mental health facility.
Oh. So how many in the MIST unit? And are they full-time?
They are full-time. I don't know now, because I know there was some mixing with our homeless outreach team and then also our substance abuse team. But mental health, I want to say that they're six now, maybe? Six, eight?
And in your perfect world, because we all have a perfect world, you'd have how many?
It's a tough question because I think we did more work when there was three of us and we were able to find
a what you just described as a lot of babysitting. So in your perfect world, how many?
I mean, you could have a whole division based on
mental illness.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
24?
You got to understand most of, I mean, what was the stat on most of our calls to 911? What was the percentage that were mental health related? It was such a large percent. So, I mean, it's, that's why the CIT is the best way because it's, in a perfect world, I'd say you have probably 30 of them assigned to each division that goes out and just deals, because then you start to learn the individuals that stay in the area, get to know them, and then sometimes, there's one guy downtown I dealt with all the time, and I would just yell at him, I'm like, hey, come on, man, you know better, and he recognizes me, so instead of the fight, he just goes, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I'm like, yeah, I know, and you learn how to, some people you gotta be polite with, some people you gotta be aggressive, some you gotta curse at, some you just gotta baby them, I mean, you just find out their personality, so, but yeah, I think a lot.
There's not enough of that anymore, in my personal opinion, because they are doing those petitions. They are doing all that process instead of going out and maybe spending more time with the known folks on the street. But I still make the referrals with the hope that some time will be found. The people in that unit are very dedicated. It takes a very special person to do that. It takes a very special person to be in traffic and motor traffic, right? I mean, it's very niche and it's very special. So I have a lot of respect for what they do. I think they should have more of them, quite frankly. But that's my opinion. So, but I've been sending a lot of cases to MIST, and again, they've been slammed. I've been slammed. And you heard from Captain about the change in OPS, and this is something that's going to also be maybe even more relevant specifically to CPAR. Is they're going to be losing a clerical staff member to retirement relatively soon. You see her name all the time, Linda. And she's the one that forwards you the resource material. And I don't know how soon someone's going to be trained to be able to pick that up. So I'm going to ask for your patience in that regard when somebody new comes on. And I'm also going to say and beg you, please check sooner if you cannot access files. Because if somebody's brand new and they're not sure what to do, and you wait till 2 minutes before, like it happens on occasion, you're not going to get that. You're going to scare that person. So please show a little consideration for the new staff member. Yeah.
Sunday, I sent an email to Linda because I didn't see that I had gotten April cases or I'd lost it somewhere, and too many emails. Anyway, on Sunday, I thought I'll send it Sunday because I wanted to be reviewing on Sunday, and I figured she'd see it Monday morning. She got back to me Sunday afternoon and sent the attachments to me, and I wrote her back and thanked her for doing that on a Sunday or day off.
You're not going to get that again. It just simply won't happen again for a while.
So when is her retirement?
May?
It is in May, yeah.
So please, I mean, it's directly related to CPAR. And additionally, for example, what they've done to try to bring somebody up, they've asked Chair Tadeo to select cases further in the future, to be able to have them stage these cases for you, so the new person doesn't have to panic at the last minute and figure it out. So have patience. Please spend a little bit quicker time to access the records. I think that will be helpful to CPAR. I want to do a suggestion. Next is, anybody see the news article the last couple of days about TPD and records? No one see that? That's making news for many years. TPD has been so far behind in satisfying records requests. It used to be for a written report, you get it quick, you can walk in, and they had walk-ins, and you know, somebody redacted, make the copy right there. Then they fell into 4 to 6 weeks behind in fulfilling written record requests, which was horrible, and people were like, well, you know, I gotta give you a list of my property, and who's gonna look for it, and how does it get to the person it needs to get to, or even worse, my insurance company is not settling until they can get a police report. And so it was screwing people's lives up, and I heard that all the time. Still heard that, you know, can you get me this record? And I don't work in records. Right. I can ask, and I try to do what I can. They can tell me to go bounce in. I don't work for TPD, right? So, but I get a lot of those are the kind of request for service cases that I'm getting, because they don't know who to call. Sometimes they think to call me, they see the word police, right? But usually they're going to get a hold of the ward office or the mayor or the city manager, and they're going to talk to Kagan. That's the way it rolls. So I take those kinds of things and I try to deal with that. So what's been happening? Oh, and body-worn camera, they were up to 2 years in fulfilling records requests because of the redaction process. It's labor-intensive. You can't just take a magic marker and strike what needs to be struck. I don't know all the laws. There are a lot of laws about what can be released and what is not releasable. The state law is a federal one. So there's a lot behind it, special skill. But when you redact a body-worn camera, you're going through this thing frame by frame, and you're not taking a magic marker, you have to pixelate, right? So, crazy. So why were they falling so far behind? Well, they didn't have the staff to do it, obviously. Why didn't they have the staff to do it? I don't know. You make your own judgment call. It's become a very hot-button issue. Recently, people have been complaining for a long time. You've seen investigative reporters are not taking credit for a multi-year investigation into what's going on with this. It's a function of finding the staff to be able to adequately do the redactions. And has TPD been, you know, chasing its tail, sending people over here, moving them from here? You know, and how many times do you hear people bitching about it? Justifiably, I hear this one all the time too. How come nobody does traffic anymore? You know, driving to work today, how many people do I see run a red light? How many people do I see speed? Don't you all give a damn? There used to be a motor copter. And what do I say? You know, there used to be, and it's not because nobody cares about traffic, but they're moving them over to violent crime unit, they're moving them over to drug unit. So they're robbing, you know, Peter to pay Paul, so to speak.
Mitch.
Don't mean officers for the records, though. And they are committed, at least they said so, to bringing on more staff to reduce the wait time. They said the wait time now is down to a few months for body-worn camera, which is amazing, thank God. And the records, written records, hopefully sooner as well. But I've got complaints, clerk's office probably heard it too. And it was not right. It really wasn't.
So, for the community to be able to get those records, is that a statute that's required, that and a mandate that police and law enforcement has to provide that? How does that work?
I don't know the rules behind it. I think it's like 5 days to satisfy for a certain release of records.
Is it a state law? Is it?
It is a state law. It's Arizona Public Records law that essentially mandates the release of those.
And that goes state by state.
It is different state by state. You also hear the term FOIA, but those are federal.
There have been no suits that I'm aware of. Could there have been? They haven't been in compliance with that state law for a long time.
So, and that's because you're basically a public agency.
Yeah, okay. And staffing within records, like what the judge said, was terrible. There were some pay adjustments done probably about a year ago that has helped. So we've been able to get some additional bodies in there, which just helped a little bit.
Yeah, and is it? I mean, and does it have to be free?
No. So there is a fee for providing. I think per copy per page, let's say 25 cents off the top of my head, and then there is also a fee for body worn cameras.
Yeah, because it's that cost recovery type of model.
If you're a victim in certain crimes, you're entitled to a free report.
Yes.
You will not be denied access to the report. You may not be able to get a copy if you can't afford it, but they'll allow you to review it there. So that's been provided for if somebody says I'm broke, I can't afford it. And some people have massive records requests. I mean, huge. And we're talking about that everything. When somebody gets, they're not happy about their OPS finding, so they won't request the OPS file. Now somebody has to sit down with the entire OPS, like you guys get, they can sit down with the entire OPS file, have to redact it, and then they can release it to the requester. But TPD, they're the custodians of those records. I mean, it's not up to me to release them. I'm not allowed to. I wouldn't even want to. They're not my records. TPD's the custodian for those records. You know, ultimately, we all own TPD, I guess you can argue that. But there are laws. They have not been in compliance for a variety of reasons. They are now making a much more concerted effort to do so. I hope it happens in my lifetime.
Thanks for that background.
What's up?
Thank you. That's interesting.
Yeah. And when did those hit the press? When did they start investigating?
They interviewed myself, assistant chief, has been speaking about the issue.
We've known about the department's known about it for years.
Oh, okay. So it's nothing.
Since Baggins was here.
Okay.
No.
Because it's reached a critical point just because the backlog builds on itself, right?
It's reached whatever point it reached for the media to pick it up, and it's probably been 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
That it's.
I have a vague recollection of that in the last two weeks.
All right. Thank you, Mitch. All right. So moving to agenda item number 9, CPAR vacancies, which is still Ward 1 and Ward 2. We're almost going to get Carlos.
Okay.
Oh. When do we get you on board?
When I finish.
When is that?
I don't know. Don't ever retire.
How close?
I don't know.
I need to find out
my numbers. I hate to say September, but I want to take that class. That'll put me way over, but I don't know. I need to check. I need to find out what my numbers are. I think I'm somewhere in the 20 range, and I don't know.
Once Kate sends me that, I can let you know.
Okay, what if I would? And I apologize, I do have to run. My wife is under temperature.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody wants to know about the Whiskey Del Bac, ask me.
Yes, I do.
She's on your deathbed.
On her deathbed, not my deathbed. I'm fine.
What's the matter with her?
She's just very sick. She doesn't get sick. So I got her on the home and make some kind of. Be cool, folks. I'm sorry.
Good night.
Tell her to get better.
I will.
She's dwarf. Small world.
All right, so moving on to the next agenda item.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Future agenda items. I think the last month we talked about the zebra crew. We have the canine Zona, their handler. I know there was a list, but I didn't bring it. Anything else that we would like to add to the agenda for?
I think Jim. Did you mention the canine?
Yeah.
Zona.
Canine. Zona. Yeah. Canine. Zona.
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 Is her name?
Should we just keep it like that for now and then move forward?
Or if we want Daryl to elaborate even more about the CIT, or have Jason Witski come in with about the MIST, or a combination of the two of them saying how both the CIT and the MIST work together or independently or something like that?
You've got 45 minutes. Be realistic about your expectations.
Okay.
You're asking for a topic that's can go on for a week. So, and you hear Daryl how passionate he is.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, and that's why I made that suggestion. But again, just a suggestion.
It could be a high-level presentation.
I mean, you've had presentations on MIST in the past. Some of your old timers might remember that. Some of the new ones. Maybe it's time to have a review about what the MIST unit is. I mean, that's certainly can be requested.
I mean, as a board.
I would suggest for the CIT, why don't we wait? He's going to get, my suggestion, he's going to get me a schedule of available classes. Let me pass that along and see if it's something that you all want to work in your schedules, because that's really the best way to take full advantage of what he can teach you. But if you want to limit it to a MIST, then I think it'd be appropriate. You're likely not going to get Winsky. You're likely going to get one of his officers, his sergeants that will take care of it. He's got sergeants.
Yeah,
he has. So that's
again, just
like
a suggestion. Because it was relevant to what we were just talking
about. Absolutely.
I mean, we're not able to change the agenda to fit the training in under 2 hours.
Would how long do you want to hold the meeting?
No. Not on a Tuesday night.
Hours? No.
We'd be here tonight.
Your choice.
Okay.
You're not limited to anything.
Yeah.
If you want to do a full 2 hours on a training about CIT, you can do that. And it's part of what you're allowed to do per ordinance. You're not limited to this stuff.
I'll order the pizza.
No,
is that what we're doing?
It's up to you.
Next month. I'm just kidding. We'll table it. Yeah?
Sure.
Okay.
But I do like her idea of MIST.
Is that an acronym? MIST?
Mental health. Are you asking Cap to explore that?
Sure.
Of course.
All right. Anything else before we end? No? All right. Adjourning the meeting at 7:02.
Woo woo!
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, honey.
Thank you.
Take the new phone number, 520. Oh, I didn't know you were going to just start telling.